Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of Cavalytics, a podcast focused on the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a slant towards statistical analysis. You can follow us on Twitter at CavaliticsNBA. I am Keith Carter. I've been a suffering Cavs fan for around 25 years. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, and he brings obsessive Cavs fandom as well as perhaps the world's most complete knowledge of LeBron James's statistical canon to the podcast. How's it going, Arnav?
It's going well. How about yourself?
I'm good. That was a nice win last night.
Yeah, it was. It was one of the better wins we've had, and also some of the more optimistic things came from that game.
Yeah, so we're going to be calling today's podcast Reasons for Optimism. There's been a lot of hand-wringing about the Cavs' unprecedented firing of head coach David Blatt and what that implies with regards to LeBron James's role on the club, but we're going to do our best to table talking about all that speculation and instead focus more on some things we've noticed over the last three games. To that end, Arnav has done some digging into the numbers around the first three games of new head coach Tyronn Lue's head coaching career, and he's going to reveal some of the positive things he's found. So why don't you kick us off, Arnav?
Sure. So I think one of the main things we've seen is that LeBron James has been insanely efficient in these last two games. So in fact, if you look at the number of games he's had in a Cavs uniform where he scored 20 plus, that number comes out to be 568.
Okay.
And as it turns out, he's had his two most efficient games by field goal percentage under Tyronn Lue in these last two games.
Wow. So I think last night he was 7 of 8, right?
7 of 8 with 7 of 7 from free throw line.
Wow. Okay.
And that was also his most efficient by true shooting percentage.
Huh. So, you know, we could be looking at a sample size issue here, but two of the last two is at least somewhat encouraging.
Right. Like, it's not to say, obviously, we haven't played any amazing teams, right? Phoenix is 27th or 28th defensively. Minnesota's down there, too. And while they may be poor teams, I mean, he's played plenty of poor teams in his career, right?
Right, these aren't the first two games LeBron James has played in a Cavs uniform against basement dwellers.
Right. And it's not to say that Tyronn Lue is the reason. I think the point here is that he's at least not been a negative so far, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, we haven't seen some sort of slump, so that's good.
Right.
Tyronn Lue has, at least the narrative has been that he wants to play at a faster pace. And that he wants the Cavs to be moving the ball around more. Have you seen that in the games?
The ball movement, yes, but faster pace, no. I mean, if you look at the numbers, the pace last night was 92 point something, and okay, their average this entire season has been 94 plus. So they weren't playing any faster.
Okay, so pace is number of possessions per 48 minutes, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I think their season average is like 94 or something, right?
Right, exactly. And the thing is, I think what did happen, though, is that they ran out in transition a lot more. So they had 19 fast break points, which that number for them usually hovers around like 10 or 12. So every time they caught a ball, they got the ball, they ran out. And every time they got a steal, they also ran out. The problem was when they were in a half court set, they took forever. So that kind of balanced everything out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the way that LeBron James and Kyrie Irving set up plays, I'm not sure that our half-court offense is ever going to be described as quick. But the Cavs do get, I mean, they're an outstanding rebounding team. They do get, you know, quite a few, you know, sort of transition, fast break and transition opportunities a game. So you can imagine if they start pushing those, that'll at least affect the pace a little bit, and you could also imagine those possessions being more efficient because, you know, the defense doesn't have time to get set.
And one thing that helped last night was that they had 12 steals with J.R. Smith having 4 of them, so that's an easy leak out, and it's easy to get transition points in.
Yeah, I mean,
that's not going to be the case every night.
Yeah,
you're
I mean,
have 12 steals a night.
A bushel full of steals is always like a good right, you know, cure for the offense. But yeah, the Suns were particularly sloppy last night.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before. Steals are kind of underrated as a defensive metric, right? I think there was an article that came out by It was a 538. Do you remember
I don't remember. I think it might have predated 538, but
that? Okay.
whoever
I
wrote
think
it
it basically talked
ended
about
up at
how
538.
a steal could potentially be worth 8 points.
Yeah, I was trying to quantify the benefit
Yeah.
of a steal and, normalizing it, compared to what the value of a point was. And yeah, so I mean, a steal does a number of things. The first is it ends the other team's offensive possession. The second is it gives your team an offensive possession that has a higher expected value of points for that possession than a typical offensive possession because
Exactly.
you're running down the court. Yeah,
And it
the
depends. All
article.
steals aren't
Well, go
equal,
ahead.
right? Like if you're playing the passing lanes, those steals typically have a much better chance because you're not as likely to be caught out of position. But if you're gambling on a one-on-one possession, in that case, you may not be as well off because if you're caught out of position, the guard can just take you off the dribble and drive.
Right. Do you know if the Cavs have a higher steal rate than the NBA average?
Last time I checked, it was lower, but I can look it up.
Huh. Yeah, it's the reason why I ask is, well, LeBron seems to get one or two steals a game that are beyond sort of the normal. It's the kind of steal that he's getting because he's so athletically dominant and good at reading the plays.
Yeah, he's really good at reading the passing lanes when he wants to. It's really weird. Sometimes he just doesn't care. But other
Yeah.
times he's like amazing. You can just see him coming.
Right. Yeah, you can almost
Well, the
see
other
it
team
before it's
can't,
going to
but yeah.
happen. Shumpert is obviously has some of
He's
the
really
best
good at
hands in the
that.
NBA. Yeah, maybe we can look into that sometime, but yeah, his on-ball defense is pretty impressive.
So actually on that topic, J.R. Smith, he gambles a lot for steals, but last night he wasn't gambling as much as he was reading the passing lanes, which is always a better thing to do. And Tyron actually brought that up in the post-game presser, where he said that he actually brought up JR's deficiencies. He actually said that JR always gambles for steals, and that's never a good thing. But now he's been doing a much better job of showing his hands, much better job of staying in position, and a much better job of reading the passing lanes. So I thought that was a very positive thing coming out of the coach.
Yeah, that is, and that sort of dovetails into something that we'd been talking about before we started recording here, which is Tyronn Lue's press conferences are fascinating.
Yeah, I mean they're kind of a learning experience because as a fan, I always have these questions after the game where like, why did the coach do something this way, and what was his reasoning behind it? And you rarely ever get answers, right? In these interviews, like coaches want to keep their strategies to themselves, even though they might be very simple things, and that's not going to change anything.
Yeah, well, with David Blatt, you can almost go a little bit beyond that. I mean, he was
Yeah,
so
he
well
was
spoken
very.
and good at like handling the media that he could do a 10-minute press conference without revealing anything about decisions he made or what he was thinking during the game.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, with Tyronn Lue so far, like he says things that are interesting and reveals sort of some juicy nuggets about what he's thinking and what he's trying to do. For example, last night, maybe you can remember the specifics, but in general, he was talking about how they track the number of passes the team makes on offense,
Right.
and as the number of passes goes up, the field goal percentage also goes up. Now, this is like obviously not a surprising finding, but that is something that they're focusing on and communicating to the players is like extremely encouraging.
Yeah, he said they put it up on the board, right? I think that's what he mentioned in the post-game presser. And he said they've been focusing on that relentlessly and telling the players to keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's particularly good. That's particularly a good thing for Kyrie and LeBron to focus on. They have a tendency sometimes to hold the ball. But yeah, I mean, if they get a cookie every time they make five passes, that's good.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think on your mention of steals,
Yeah.
Cavs, yeah, I mean they're not that good. They're bottom 10, so which makes
Yeah, I mean,
sense.
it does make sense. I'm not sure if that's bad, right? So steals are obviously outstanding, everything else being equal, but the problem with steals is that to get them, you need to gamble a little bit,
Yeah.
and that gamble can leave the back line of your defense exposed. So
Right.
I'm not sure I feel like the Cavs are too conservative They might be right around where they are, where
Yeah.
they need to be.
Yep. Okay. And then for the another thing that typically, I think that hasn't been focused on recently is LeBron's defense. I think everyone has been talking about his offense being the reason why he's so good and so efficient.
Sure.
But his defense, I feel like, has been really underappreciated this season. Last season, it was actually not that good. But this season, he's improved tremendously in that area,
Okay,
which really shows his potential
can you
for,
quantify that at all?
yeah, of course. So I think if you look at his one-on-one defensive numbers by SportsView data,
Okay.
you can see that overall, players score at a field goal percentage that is 11.5 points lower than their average field goal percentage when guarded by LeBron.
Yeah,
Now, if you
that's
parse
incredible.
that,
Do you have any idea what the sample size is for that? So that's for the first 43 games of this season, right?
first 43 games of the season, where so the sample size is huge overall because he has, so people have attempted 8 field goal attempts per game against him,
Oh
which
wow.
makes
Okay,
sense.
yeah,
Yeah.
that's an enormous sample size. Yeah,
That's a huge sample size,
I
yeah.
was wondering how many field goals were attempted because teams occasionally at least try not to go against have the guy who's on LeBron try to score a bunch. But okay, 8 a game is definitely statistically relevant.
Right. And then I also try, so there's no way to sort this for all the players in the league. So it's hard to tell like who's the best in these things. You actually have to go one by one and look at them. So I looked at some of the better defenders. Like I looked at Tony Allen, I looked at Kawhi Leonard, and I looked at some other people. And it
Okay.
seems like these numbers, I mean, LeBron's the best at them. There's no, I couldn't find anyone who had better one-on-one defensive numbers by SportsView data. And obviously there are some caveats here. Like this doesn't mean that he's the best one-on-one defender in the league. Because
Huh.
one big aspect of one-on-one defense is to actually deny the ball to the ball handler. Whereas LeBron isn't that good at that aspect of it. Kawhi is actually
Yeah,
amazing
well,
at that.
so yeah, I'm wondering about that. So I know, if you look at defensive RPM, I know that, Kawhi Leonard's top 10. There's some other guys on the list who are weird. Like Tim Duncan, I think, is number one. Let me look
He's
that up right
always been
now.
number one.
Yeah. So Tim Duncan is,
Kind of
by
ridiculous.
defensive real plus minus, he is the best defensive player in the league. Bogut is two, DeAndre Jordan three, Draymond Green four,
So one thing
Ian
about that.
Mihimi five, Leonard six. Yeah, but so yeah, do you have
Oh, they
yeah?
have some
So
like box score priors and they have some other priors, which
yeah,
basically are
that's
just
true.
inputs into the system, and height is one of them. So center's defensive RPM is
Yeah.
always going to be inflated.
Yeah, the top five are all guys who are centers or power forwards.
Yeah, I think
Which,
Draymond is probably one of the more realistic ones because he's actually not that tall.
in fact, Kawhi Leonard is the only guy in the top 33 who isn't a power forward or center. Number 33 is Tony Allen.
Makes sense, right? I mean, he was Defensive Player of the Year
Yeah, and
deservingly.
interesting, LeBron James is 36. He is the third non-center or power forward in defensive RPM. So yeah, actually this does make sense. So the
All this makes
SportsVU
sense, yeah.
data, yeah, the SportsVU data shows that LeBron stops people's shooting, yeah, makes people's shooting significantly worse, and yeah, so the defensive RPM supports that. So that's great. I mean, to my eye, it has looked like LeBron has been exerting more effort on the defensive end this year. Last year, at times, it felt like there were plays that he would take off. He even used the word chill mode, I believe, in a post-game press conference. But yeah, I mean, this is incredibly encouraging, not just for this season, but for LeBron's sort of longevity. Like, if he can be, one of the best defensive players in the league, that will sort of extend his runway of value.
It's interesting because his defense isn't really predicated on, like, he isn't trying to choke out the defender. He's not actually a lockdown defender, quote unquote, in that sense. But his hands are really good, and his positioning is amazing. And
Yeah,
he pretty much only contests when.
his positioning combined with his strength,
Right,
just
exactly.
makes him, it sort of puts a wall in front of people.
So, like, if you look at his, if you even parse down this data more, and you look at how he's defended the pick and roll ball handler. So there have been 65 possessions this season where LeBron has defended the ball handler out of the pick and roll.
Okay.
And he's only given up 0.49 points per possession on these possessions. And that is in the 97th percentile in the league. So it's pretty much the best.
Wow. So does that, okay, so if there is a pick and roll possession that fits those criteria any time during a possession, that's how that's measured? Or does the
So
shot need
anytime
to
the ball
come?
handler has to, takes the shot.
Okay.
There's obviously roll man possessions, which he's
Right.
okay at like 70%, which is also good because he's not a big man, right? He's not
Right.
supposed to be a
Right.
rim protector. And then in isolation, there's been 34 possessions, not a lot, where he's only given up 0.68 points per possession, which is in the 81st percentile. I think the most interesting one, though, is spot ups. This is something I've noticed a lot with him. He's not the best at putting his hands up, but he knows when to put his hands up, and he knows when to just give up on the play and run out in transition, looking
So,
for an the cut
I
opportunity.
too have noticed this idiosyncrasy about LeBron, where if somebody shoots and he doesn't think he can close the distance, he
He just
doesn't.
he free And
He
that's
gives up.
fine because
It
look at
is
his
fine,
numbers.
actually. It is fine. Well, okay. He might misjudge that one or two dozen times a season.
Right.
But the benefit is, 100 or maybe 200 times a season, he is basically leaking out and creating an opportunity if that shot misses, where he's basically guaranteed to score. And I think I don't think I'm I strongly suspect that that's a net positive.
Right. And because it has to be, because if you just look at his overall numbers, with spot ups, he's defending. He's at 131 possessions where he's closed out on people. And he's only given up 0.71 points per possession. That's in the 91st percentile in the league. So, I mean, his defensive numbers pretty much all across are in the top 10 to 15%, right? In the top 10 to 15%.
Right,
It's
and
ridiculous.
if you combine those, it's going to end up being overall in like the 97th, 98th
Right,
percentile.
exactly. I mean, and that's one of the main reasons why the Cavs have hovered anywhere between 4 to 7 in defensive efficiency as a team, where they may not have the best defenders all around.
Yeah, I mean that's an extremely encouraging sign. I wonder if during the playoffs they could use LeBron more aggressively on defense. So I don't want to say they hide LeBron on defense, but he is not always on the opposing team's best offensive player. I wonder if the Cavs can unlock some value by having LeBron guard the other team's best defensive player more often. The obvious concern there is that that can be tiring, and then his offensive efficiency would drop.
I think it all
But
depends on how good Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving are going to be come playoff time. If they can run a system, and if they can run the offense without LeBron just kind of doing
needing to hold
every
the ball
single
for
thing for
15
them,
seconds,
right, and him just playing off the ball, then I'm sure he could easily be a defensive linchpin.
But the reason for optimism there is, okay, so let's say that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love start feeling more comfortable on offense, finding situations that have high point per possession expectation. If that happens, then LeBron can expend less energy on offense, which allows him to expend more energy on defense. And so what you'd find there is you would find a slightly more efficient offense and a significantly more efficient defense. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is, yeah, the Cavs SRS, which is the number of points they score more than their opponents, scaled by opponent strength, is fourth in the league right now, which is good, but the Spurs and the Warriors have, sort of the best. They're the top two in the league and two of the top two of all time. And so I'm constantly trying to figure out ways where the Cavs' effective SRS could be, much better, so that it gets to the sort of area that the Spurs and Warriors are. And this might be a way, right? Like if they get more comfortable on offense by through some combination of playing at a higher pace, taking advantage of transition opportunities in a way that they don't right now, and Love and Irving start finding more offensive efficiency. Maybe the Cavs can get to that level. What do you think?
Yeah, I think especially on the offensive part, there's definitely reasons for optimism there because in the second half of the season after the trades last year, the Cavs had an offensive rating of 111, which is 111 points per 100 possessions. That's pretty much top 10 in NBA history, and it was right up there with Golden State's. In fact, it was actually better than Golden State's. So the Cavs had the best offensive efficiency in the second half of the season after the trades.
So do you
The problem
think?
was their defense, but this year the defense has been a problem. This year, actually, the offense has been more of a problem.
Yeah, I mean, without being like too dramatic here, that can probably almost all be tied to Kyrie Irving, right? So Kyrie Irving has
Yeah,
not been as
Kyrie
good
Irving,
this
and then
year.
also a semi-poor shooting, because last year, after his basically after January, Kevin Love shot 40% from three, and his true shooting
Okay.
percentage every single month after January was 58 or 59. So he was really good after the first few months. I'm
Okay.
hoping he gets back to that efficient those efficient levels.
Yeah, there have been some reasons for hope in Kevin Love's play lately. I mean,
Yeah, he's
amongst
looked a
other
lot better.
things, he's been an absolute beast rebounding over, I want to say, like the last 10 games. And his, well, we talked about this a little bit last night. His defensive RPM is like shockingly high. I mean, you look at Kevin Love, and it doesn't look like he's, out there, building a fortress around the hoop on defense. But the numbers don't lie. Like his defensive RPM is, well, I'll look it up here, but
It's 2 point
it's
something, I guess.
stunningly high. Yeah, I mean, I thought for sure it was going to be negative, but it's let's see here. Kevin Love is 14th in the NBA in defensive RPM, and it's 2.32, and yeah, you just
But
that
just to
wouldn't be
clarify,
my
that's only for
expectation.
power forwards, right?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's for power forwards.
So another
But
thing with him, though, is that for all his defensive shortcomings, his teams have always been better defensively when he's been on the floor. And that kind of just tells you that even though he does give up a lot in certain situations, for example, when guards switch on him, there's not much he can do. And he's like, everyone knows this. That should be a systematic issue where if a guard switches on the Kevin, other people need to cover for him. It's pretty simple. I mean,
do
he doesn't
everything you
have the
can to switch back.
right. He just does not, or they should, first of all, the guard should never even force the switch. Which in this case is Kyrie Irving, who's one of the worst pick and roll defenders I've ever seen.
He is, yeah, he's stunningly bad. I mean, the
Not
bad
as bad
news
as Mo
is,
Williams, but
yeah, that's right,
it's
that's
still pretty
right.
bad.
But Mo Williams is 31 years old, and
Fair.
doesn't have, the athletic tools that Kyrie Irving has. On one hand, it's not good that Kyrie Irving is, as I said, stunningly bad. The good news is, I mean, look, Kyrie Irving's only 24 years old.
Yeah. 24,
There's still
23.
time. I think he's 24. I'll look it up. But yeah, I mean, there's still time for him to
No,
improve, right?
23. I just looked it up.
That's great.
He's turning 24 in a couple of months, but yeah.
Yeah, he is 23.311,
Okay.
according to
Sounds
Basketball
good.
Reference. That's actually
Yeah.
wrong, right? Like, if his birthday is March 23rd, and he
Yeah,
would be
that's 23
24 then.
point. 10 divided by 12. Yeah, that's
Yeah,
23.7 something. Yeah.
that's weird. Yeah, Basketball Reference says 23.311. Just saying, yes.
Does it have a different
I'm
birth?
sure they'll
Okay,
get right
anyway.
on. What was that? Yeah, maybe they update it every month or something, but even then,
Yeah.
that would be way off. I'm sure they'll get right on fixing that. But anyway, yeah, I mean, look, Kyrie is woeful defensively. His issues on that side affect other players as well. As you said, yeah, Kyrie or Kevin Love can end up switched on a guard, where if there was a better guard defending, then that switch would never occur. But yeah, I mean, I think Kyrie's defense, I don't have high hopes for that getting significantly better this year. I think that'll sort of trend better over time, or I have hopes that'll trend better over time. But his offense, I think, can definitely improve. I mean, he.
I mean, yeah, he's woeful this year,
Yeah.
shooting wise. I mean, he's shooting what is, I think we talked about this last time, but 28% from three, that's not never gonna cut it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think. I mean, look, there's a sample size issue here. There's the issue that, he just came back from taking 8 months off. There's probably, a psychological effect here where he's frustrated. Maybe it'll be as simple as having, one or two good games in a row, and, it'll sort of snowball from there, or at least that's what I'm hoping.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And one thing, another thing I think I looked it up yesterday was that how long he holds the ball. He's been holding the ball 5 seconds pretty much for any given possession. That's a lot. I mean, LeBron averages 4, but recently he's only been holding about 2 seconds per possession. Basically
Yeah,
since, yeah.
the SportsVU data, which, by the way, the SportsVU data is so every NBA arena now has video cameras that have a vertical view of the court, and SportsVU parses that data and comes up with and generates a bunch of statistics, some of which are not revealed to the public and some of which are. One of the ones that is revealed to the public is how much time various players hold the ball per possession. And yeah, I mean, Kyrie has got to be one of the highest in the NBA. I mean, look, just watching Kyrie, you can tell this is the case. He puts on dribbling exhibitions and looks to create something by holding the ball. He should probably be discouraged from doing that as much.
Right. I think he would ha also have a much easier time getting into rhythm if he took easier shots.
Yeah, maybe he's wearing
That
himself out
said,
with all
what
that
makes
dribbling.
him, I think what makes him one of the best players was that his ability to actually beat people off the dribble. So he does need to get better at everything he's trying right
Yeah, I mean,
now.
look, there's a fine line here. You don't want to tell Kyrie, look, you're not allowed to dribble. He's, arguably the best dribbler in the NBA. And so, like, that's always going to be a big part of his game. Like, he's never going to be, I don't know, Kyle Korver. Yeah, I think there's a balance, and right now I think he's hewing a little bit too much on the holding ball. I'm cautiously optimistic that Tyronn Lue is also aware of this, especially based on some of the things he's been saying at his press conferences. And so, it's hard to focus on. I don't know if you've ever played golf, but when you take a golf lesson, sometimes you can get bombarded with information. They're like, oh, keep your head down and do your stroke this way. And if you're trying to focus on seven different things at the same time, you do everything poorly. I think the Cavs right now, like Tyronn Lue is new. They've made some changes. Right now they're focusing on pace. Maybe next week or next month it'll be not holding ball, and hopefully. With enough time, the Cavs can unlock, the potential that I think we both believe they have.
I agree.
Yeah. So we've been going for about 27 minutes here. Anything else you wanted to throw in, or do you think we're good?
Yeah, just a couple of things I wanted to add in. So Kevin Love's usage rate last night was 31.7%. It's pretty
Okay,
much
so
the highest it's been for a while. And
that's
LeBron was
significantly
only
above his average.
19.6%, which makes sense.
Yeah, well, LeBron only took 8 shots last night, so that I'm not surprised about that. But yeah, I mean,
He
the
wasn't holding the
focus.
ball much. He wasn't dribbling around too much. He took a lot of free throws, which is a good thing because his free throw rate has dropped a bunch.
Yeah, no, I noticed. I remember two moments in particular where I was like, "Huh, LeBron is clearly focusing on distributing the ball here." Like it was nice to see. But yeah, okay, so Kevin Love, 31% usage rate. You want to quickly rehash what usage rate is?
Usage rate is basically, it's a bunch of factors, right? It's not just one thing. So it's how long you hold the ball. It's how many field goal attempts you have, how many possessions you're basically taking into account.
Yeah, turnovers are also part of usage rate.
Right.
But yeah, it's measuring basically what percentage of the time a certain player is doing something with the ball. In any case, yeah, so Kevin Love has been down, I think, around 20 most of the season, or 19 maybe.
No, it's been over that. It's been
Oh, has
around
it?
like 23, 24, yeah.
Okay.
Which is not bad, but
That's
I think it needs to be a little higher.
yeah, it's
But the
still
problem
lower
is Kyrie's
than
been over
Minnesota.
30, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, here we are back on Kyrie. I mean, look, he I'm hoping that this is all because he's shaking the rust off, and that'll sort of come down, and we'll get more usage on higher efficiency players going
Right.
forward. But yeah, I mean, I think it would be hard to argue. Look, we have a small sample size here, but it would be hard to argue that the Cavs in general are not making an effort to get Kevin Love into situations where he can do things with the ball more.
Not anymore. I think Tyronn Lue has actually done a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, and
But
that's.
obviously it's a 2-game sample size, so we don't know if it's going to continue.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tiny sample, but certainly directionally, it's good.
And then a couple other things. Cavs are the second best team in the NBA off of the catch and shoot. So they have the second best effective field goal percentage after the Golden State
Right.
Warriors. The only
Yeah,
problem
that's.
is they only have 11th most catch and shoot frequency percentage. So they shoot a lot of pull-ups when they shouldn't be shooting a lot of pull-ups. Basically, that's the
Yeah, okay. So the sports view data tracks two different shot types. One is catch and shoot, which is when you catch the ball and shoot without dribbling it. The other is pull up, which is basically everything that isn't a catch and shoot. The Cavs, to
It's not
my
everything,
eye,
sorry. It's not
oh,
everything.
is are, what are the other kinds?
So other kinds could be like you're cutting, right? You know what I mean? It
They
doesn't
don't
have
call
to be
that.
pull up or
They don't
catch and
call that.
shoot.
That's not called a pull up.
No, it's not called. If you're say cutting to the hoop and you just lay it in or something, that's not a pull up.
Okay.
Or
I
you're
thought
just talking about jump shots.
no, for some reason I thought that the only two kinds of shots in the sports view data were basically ones with a dribble and ones without. But
No, no,
okay,
no. So,
well,
because so we have a frequency percentage for catch and shoot of 30%. We have the
okay.
same frequency percentage for pull up. So that's only 60% of our
Okay.
shots.
All right. So there's 40% something else. All right. Well, in any
Yeah.
case, yeah, catch and shoots are typically better shots because the implication with a catch and shoot is that you are open. You don't need to dribble in order to create the space to take a shot. And so catch and shoot shooting percentages are almost always higher. That is, of course, the case with the Cavs as well. And you're saying they're number two in the NBA in catch and shoot percentage. Is
Right,
that right?
exactly. Effective field
Yeah,
goal percentage.
I wonder if there are things they can do to find more catch and shoots. I mean, you would think that
I
we
mean, ball
certainly we
movement, right? It's pretty
yeah, right,
simple.
of course, but and but you would think that like we actually have like good ingredients for that because
Right.
Love is so good in the paint. People need to collapse on that. Plus, Love is an outstanding passer, so he could create catch and shoot opportunities. LeBron James obviously is, you know, frequently double or triple teamed, so he could. And same with Irving when he's on. So yeah, you wonder if that becomes a if that became a point of emphasis for the Cavs, if they could find some
Yeah,
gains there.
I think the hope is that the gross misuse of Kevin Love changes, because he really needs to be as a facilitator. I think he's an excellent passer.
Yeah,
I
he's
think
so
his
good at it.
offensive role should be pretty similar to that of Draymond Green's, where he's running the unit when Steph Curry or LeBron is not yet running the unit.
Yeah, Tyronn Lue talked about that a little bit. I can't remember if it was this last game's last night's press conference or the one before, but he talked about trying to get Kevin Love on the court when Kyrie
When the
Irving,
second, yeah.
yeah, when the second unit, yeah, when LeBron and Kyrie are out.
Even with them, I think it's fine to give him some touches. LeBron is probably a better passer in a vacuum, but he also creates way more turnovers than Kevin does sometimes.
Right.
So I think it's
Yeah, I
okay that
mean,
you wouldn't get him possessions when both are
a
on the
lot
court.
of Kevin Love's turnovers are on the type of passes that I wouldn't describe as a facilitating pass. It's the sort
Yeah,
of
those are the outlets,
high
yeah.
risk, high reward outlet passes, and then also he occasionally attempts cross court passes. Like if he's in the corner for a three and he's not open, he'll sometimes try a risky cross court pass. And I think if he could, I don't want to say eliminate both of those, but you know, be a little bit more heady about attempting those, I think that his already low turnover rate would be even lower.
I
But in
think I
any
think
case,
so. Here's the weird thing, right? So
yeah.
when he does his outlet passes, he obviously puts a lot of strength into it. But when he does his cross court passes, they're extremely lazy for some reason,
Yeah, it
and
looks
they
like, you
always
know,
get
Peyton
picked.
Manning.
Whereas LeBron, yeah, whereas LeBron's, that's never the case because he puts so much strength in his passes.
Right. Yeah, there's a technique issue there, but
Yeah.
yeah, it does seem like yeah, like love on the elbow just seems like a devastating force that we don't see enough of. But you
Right.
know, look, they're working on it. I have confidence that we're going to see more of that, and it'll be interesting to see.
Oh, and then one last thing before we leave off. So in the
Sure,
month of
go for it.
January, JR has been amazing. He has a true shooting percentage of 59.5.
Holy smokes.
This is a full month of January. I mean, the month is almost over now. He's shooting the three-pointer at 44%, and he's at a net rating of 11. And the month before that, he had a net rating of negative 0.6. So he
Wow.
significantly improved this month.
Yeah, that's boy, that did not fit my intuition. I mean, I obviously he's
No, he
had
was
it.
definitely terrible for the to begin the season.
Yeah.
That's undeniable. But he's improved a lot this past month.
I wonder, did you have a theory for why that is? Like maybe he showed up out of shape or you know, what he didn't look out of shape. Like what do you think that could be?
Yeah, no, he was. I don't think he was out of shape or anything. I think confidence. He's a he thrives on confidence, right? I think he does much better when he knows as other people out there, and basically he's not the reason why the team might lose. Like, well, you can see his worst games, and they always come against the best teams. when he's forced to do a lot more than he should have been.
Yeah.
Like in the finals, I mean, he kind of just, he was terrible in the finals.
Yeah, he withered a little bit there. But yeah, J.R. Smith is such an odd man. I mean,
So good at making some of the worst shots you can ever
I mean,
you'll ever
you
see.
just he's so frustrating to watch sometimes, but such a delight to watch at others. I mean, that man can shoot. But yeah, okay, so
Statistically,
that's
one of
good.
the
I
better
mean,
passers on the team too. It's really weird.
yeah, I mean, maybe it's the case that, it just took him a while to find his rhythm this year, and now he's going to be back to what he was sort of in the second half of last season, which was
Oh, I
just sort
hope
of
so.
an outstanding contributor to the team.
Because his catch and shoot percentages has always been, at the top of the league. That's never been a problem for him.
He can shoot. I wish he would do less of the pull-up variety, but look, you take the good with the bad with him.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of a number of reasons for optimism here. I mean, the Warriors and Spurs are still this sort of big bad wolves out there, but say what you will about the firing of David Blatt while the team was in first place, and how that's unprecedented. At least the early returns on Tyronn Lue, should give sort of multiple reasons for hope, and we'll have to see. I mean, look, we've still got 40 games to play here. There's a lot less left to be told, but yeah, I think there's some good reason for optimism.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, so this has been episode 2 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. And we're planning on doing these at least a couple times a week, so we will be back soon.